You never know who you're going to meet in the cabaret of ideas. I'm stood next to two supposedly huge minds, according to Bill, who was arranged today. Please tell me who you are and what you do.
I'm Sophie Rocks. I'm a lecturer in nanotoxicology at Cranfield University in Bedfordshire.
And you are?
I'm Robert Dorey. I'm chair of functional nanomaterials at the University of Surrey.
Already my mind is blown. Can you tell me a little bit more about the research you're doing?
My title is nanotoxicology. However, I've sort of moved more into emerging risks and how do we deal with situations when there are large uncertainties. So something like nanomaterials, so materials which are really, really small, much smaller than a human cell, we don't really know how to detect them in the environment, but we do know that they're being released. So we've got a large area of uncertainty there. So we know that they cause effects, but we can't actually see them or detect them. And how do we assess the risks from that is one of the questions that I'm dealing with. It's one of those key issues for the government at the moment. DEFRA has just funded a whole lot of research in the area, but we can't detect them. We're not 100% certain that we can show that a material has a cause effect. And so we are stuck in an area of uncertainty.
Are you dealing a lot with kind of oceanic issues?
I personally am not. I'm more in terms of human health through the environment. So consumer products such as socks. Socks from Marks and Spencers have silver nanoparticles in, and your fridge and your freezer tend to have silver nanoparticles in the lining of them because they have antimicrobial effects. I'm therefore interested in how those escape that matrix or the enclosure, how they get into the environment, and then what happens to them, and is human health affected by that? So we know that you put socks in the washing machine. We know that when you wash socks, things come out of them. We're assuming that the silver nanoparticles don't actually stay attached to the socks. Where do they go from there, and is that a problem?
Now I'm freaked out because I do have some of this smart clothing. I've had it for many years, underwear that are guaranteed not to get whiffy over a period of time. Yeah. And I have found that back in the day, it wasn't so nano. It was like silver thread. They would actually put very fine silver thread woven in amongst the merino, for example. And rather than trusting the glorious properties of a natural fibre like merino wool, I thought, well, I've got to get some of that nano goodness in there because it will stop me smelling. Should I fear for more about it being close to my damp body? Try not to say the word moist.
There is, well, if you think about nano and you think about the sizes, we actually get really good effects from very small amounts of material. And Rob can actually talk about that a lot more in a minute. So we're actually looking at something that's very small that's added into the material. We haven't been able to, as far as I understand it, we haven't been able to conclusively prove that the silver nanoparticles are still in the material when it gets to you. So that's one thing. However, we're also been exposed to silver for a long time. It's one of those natural elements. It's something that we know has had an environmental effect in the past. Somewhere quite close to here, and Rob will be able to tell me exactly where, hopefully, there was the Kodak print factories, and they used to release silver ions into the environment. And we showed that there was an environmental effect there. And we know that the population of the rivers, the fish populations, I think, of the rivers, were actually affected by the release of silver ions. What we don't know about silver nanoparticles is whether they stay as nanoparticles, or a lot of people think that they actually go into the ionic form. So it's exactly the same thing that we've got with silver metal that we used in photographic prints as we've got with the socks and other underwear.
Rob, elaborate on why silver is an issue here and gold, for example, I imagine isn't, what with me once having some vodka with flakes of gold in because somebody thought it was cool. I thought it was pretty rank, to be honest. But is it to do with inertness?
Certainly gold is an incredibly inert metal, so it doesn't tend to react with anything around it. Silver affects the sort of biological things, so like the bacteria, by actually preventing them from reproducing. So it dissolves, it's relying on it dissolving in the environment and forming silver ions, which then the microbes absorb and then stop reproducing, and then ultimately the population dies out. So the river that Sophie was referring to was down in Ilford in North London, where the photographic prints were doing. It basically killed off the fish population. population in the sort of early 50s, 40s. But then with increased environmental protection, that soon sorted itself out and the river's living again. But I wouldn't worry so much about your underpants. It's kind of been shown that after about 8 washes, all of the silver's pretty much gone from your underpants.
So I've lost all the good qualities other than the pockets, because they're not going to wash away. I do have pockets in my underwear, just in case. That is fascinating. When you say, so it was Ilford, not Kodak, completely different company?
Yes, no, it was the photographic Ilford.
Just to put Kodak in the clip, not that it's going to do them any good now. And I did used to use a lot of Ilford photo stock as well. What other stuff are you working in that might confuse and astound me?
So my area is functional nanomaterials. So when we talk about functional materials, these are materials that go beyond simply holding something up. So typically sort of concrete, brick, wood. These are all structural materials. So their primary purpose is to form the structure which is sort of around them. A functional material is able to interact with the world in some way. So it could be as simple as emitting light, detecting pressure, causing some kind of movement, detecting temperature changes. So when you start bringing all these different things together, you can get to a very complicated and very exciting system where it starts sensing you around it and then responding in some way. So some nice examples of sort of artistic installations where people wander into the room, detect that people are moving around in that room, and it changes the environment of that room. So it might change the colour, changes a different kind of music that's being played. So that's being predominantly done at the moment with discrete sensor technology. So these are individual sensors that are connected up together, connected to a computer to control an environment. But what I'm working on is it possible to do that within a very discrete system? So can I make your clothes or the paint on your wall sensitive to your arrival into the room? So we're kind of doing away with a sort of discrete sensor scattered everywhere to small little intelligent sensors distributed around the whole environment talking to each other. And then we start getting into the sort of terminology of the Internet of Things, where we're no longer reliant on a central intelligent unit that does all the sort of thinking for it, but the individual elements around start responding in different ways. And it's really exciting bringing all these different materials together.
I'm both amazed and astounded at the possibilities of the Internet of Things, the fact that there are more things talking on the Internet already than human beings, and not just the moment you say sensors, tiny little sensors embedded in the walls. And I tried to say that in my Orwell narrative voice because, you know, surveillance is going to be hopefully working for us, and I hope that the advancements in AI computing are going to ensure that our devices are loyal to us and only us, so that should we decide to be involved in a sensor-based environment, it's our friend.
Well, we can always hope that it's our friend, but with all technology, it's the user and the controller of that technology that ultimately dictate how friendly or how evil that particular piece of technology is. I mean, it's not something new that's suddenly coming on board all of a sudden. You just have to look back at any sort of, the gun is the classic example. On its own, a gun is completely harmless. It depends entirely on what the person who's holding it, what their intentions are.
The evil that men do. And hopefully, some will come around with amazing innovations. So we're just so happy with what technology is doing for us. We don't need to strive for wealth and riches or anything. And maybe a Star Trek universe is on the cards. I know that as much as I saturate myself with complicated, inspiring technology, I've got a titanium hip flask, for example, because I don't want to be carrying anything other than whiskey around. I don't want a heavy hip flask when it's empty. This is more depressing than a heavy hip flask when it's empty. But as people who work in materials, can you tell what my shoes are made of? Just the cloth. Don't, not you, someone's cheating you.
No.
I'll let you examine. This is one of my favourite materials because of what it does, and it was developed in the 1930s, pre-war. There's another clue. If you take the hat out of my bag that should be poking out, can you see that? I'm just turning around. Okay, that's made of the same stuff. Don't look on the inside.
It feels a little sort of waxed, but it could be something like Gore-Tex, one of these advanced wicking materials.
It's way older than Gore-Tex.
What are the Dirty Macs they make out of?
So this is cotton, and it's but it's the way that it's woven together to make a British invention, invented in Manchester in the 30s, ventile.
Okay.
And so, do you know what ventile does? It's so tightly woven, the moment it gets wet, it swells up and becomes waterproof. Yeah, it still has breathable properties. So I've found myself getting rid of my noisy synthetic sometimes and going back to the more organic kind of, I don't know, just weave it together really tightly, right? Which is nearly nano, I guess.
Oh. Within the world of nanotechnology, there's a lot of work being focused on the nanostructuring of materials. So when you start getting down to very, very fine cotton fibres that are woven incredibly well together so that the pore size is on the order of the nanometers, the individual strands of the cotton are certainly on the nanoscale. I mean, your natural fibres can easily be on that kind of dimensions. So, yeah, you could arguably make that case that is a 1920s, 1930s nanoscale material that's been developed by the British.
And we're returning, aren't we? I mean, I sleep under a wool duvet and they're finding out this what's it called? Is it hollow fiber, the fact that there is a cavity within the wool that enables regulation of heat, not insulation. Heard of such a thing?
Yes, I have. Have we got one? Probably not.
We've got a synthetic one. Yeah,
you've got synthetic, honestly. It's like sleeping under Coke bags. Quick plug for my dad, Barve. Barve, wool duvets. Didn't want to throw an advertisement in here, but it is my dad. And so, yeah, he wants me to spell it out. Someone go, B-A-A, it's V-E-T. There we go. Yeah, yeah. Everywhere material. Who's had the hands on graphene?
Yes.
You've both had your hands on graphene.
Yes.
Well, not physically, because we try and avoid actually touching graphene, because there's all the health and safety issues, which Sophie knows all about.
What happens if you touch it?
You absorb it? No, not necessarily. I mean, it's a carbon-based thing. Mm. But with everything that we do in any laboratory setting, we've got to be aware of health and safety directives. And the Health and Safety Executive has got quite strong directives on how to work with carbon nanomaterials. So everything that we do has got to be governed by a precautionary approach to risk.
Do you make your own or bring it in?
Well, at Cranfield, we don't make our own. I don't think you do at Surrey.
I personally don't at Surrey, but my colleagues do have a new graphene fabrication line coming online.
Is that a DVD player? You can make it with a DVD player.
You can make it with sellotape as well. They've got a...
Oh, I remember this.
Basically how they first discover it. They took some sellotape and some graphite, which is the three-dimensional structure, and basically just kept sticking sellotape onto the graphite, peeling it off and having a look at it. And it was actually a very lucky discovery, because what they were interested in was the graphite side. And one day they said, oh, well, let's have a look at what's on the sellotape side. And it's when they looked at the sellotape, so in effect the rubbish, that it discovered these atomically thin layers of graphite, which they termed graphene.
I could talk to you guys forever. You're a couple, are you?
Yes.
What are your conversations like of an evening? Please tell me they're less interesting.
Yesterday we had the conversation about lightning and cloud lightning, and how impressive it was, and where the storm was going.
Does it become like a fact trade-off?
We're not actually that sad. A lot of our conversations soon devolve into what was on the television. Oh, isn't that little doggy cute on the RSPCA programme?
Disney marathons. We did the marathon in Walt Disney World in January. Our first marathon, 6 hours, 40 minutes. So we did actually walk quite a lot of it. And we've just signed up for doing a half marathon on the other side of America to get our coast-to-coast medals.
Can people find you tweeting or in the social media circles?
Absolutely. I have a Twitter account, Robert_Dory.
I do as well. And you know what? I can't remember it. I think it's...
I'll get Robert to tweet it.
Sophie Rocks.
Sophie Rocks.
Yes.
Good name if it is. If you do go to Sophie Rocks and she's not into nano stuff, you might have the wrong person.
Or just look for Doctor Who.
Doctor Who?
Yes. Because I think I've put it on my Twitter account that I'm into Doctor Who.
Okay, so that will be in the profile as well. Guys, thank you so much, and I look forward to seeing you inspiring members of the public, I'm sure there's some wonderful, not-so-general people in amongst them, buying tickets right now to come into this amazing Spiegel tent. Why are you doing this?
It was something that somebody just mentioned at work, and I... really enjoy interacting with the public. Well, I shouldn't say the public, but it's really nice to talk to people who are actually interested in what I do rather than other academic members of staff who are just interested in what I can do for them.
Absolutely. I mean, talking to the public and getting our science and developments out there and known about is one of the most fascinating parts of the job that we do.
And one of the other things is somebody here that we talk to today may actually have more idea of what we're going to do in the future. So we actually get information and ideas back from people that we talk to and use that in the future.
Fantastic. I look forward to the future of underwear.